The role of a muse might seem, to put a phrase forward, amusing. Muses can be male or female, can be old or young, but Greek mythology made them young, installed 9 of them, and created them female. In that tradition, then, comes Francine Prose, whose book, The Lives of the Muses, 9 Women and the Artists They Inspired, contemplates how the muse-artist relationship is lived out in real life. From Samuel Johnson's Hester Thrail to Yoko Ono and John Lennon, Prose's book makes plain that all these women suffered greatly for the art of others, but she says there's no reason to feel sorry for most of them.
They all led incredibly interesting and dramatic and romantic and productive lives compared to the women of their centuries and compared to really women of any time. So the only one I felt pity for was Lizzie Siddal, who was the Pre-Raphaelite poet Dante Gabriel Rossetti's muse, because, you know, she was this sort of harmless, she was working in a millinery shop, this sort of pretty girl who they adopted, the Pre-Raphaelites, and she wound up becoming, you know, a world-class opium addict and dying of an opium overdose when she was quite young. And then there was that horrible story, you know, after she died, he, in a fit of remorse for how badly he treated her, he threw his manuscript of poetry into her grave, into her open grave, and said, you know, I'm so sorry, I should have been taking care of her. And then 10 years later, in a fit of remorse, he had her exhumed so he could get the manuscript back. It wasn't in great shape by the time he got it.
I think that a lot of these stories look to me like calculated bets by these women, and only they can say whether this throw of the dice is worth it. For example, they are better remembered by history than they might otherwise ever be, but they had to pay the price for that. Lou Salome, the muse of Nietzsche, and also later Freud and others, is one who you call a serial muse. Some of these women inspired more than one artist.
Yeah, and Lou certainly knew what she was doing. I mean, she left Russia. She came from a military family in Russia. She was incredibly driven. She went to Rome. She met Nietzsche. She became involved in, again, a very strange way. I mean, none of these relationships were what you would call normal, healthy adult relationships. Became involved with Nietzsche. Then after that tanked, shortly thereafter, she became involved with Rilke, and then later with Freud. So she knew, I mean, she had a kind of amazing talent for identifying guys that would, turn into something.
And yet never married any of them, married a man who was quite conventional by the standards of all the artists that she inspired.
Yeah, although again, she married a linguistics professor, although again, they didn't exactly have a conventional relationship. She was married to him for, I think, 40 years and never slept with him.
Francine Prose, what is the difference between a muse, a real muse who history remembers, and an art wife?
Well, a muse is much more romantic, unattainable. Her job is really inspiration. That's what she does. An art wife settles down and becomes a sort of enabler. She does the grocery shopping, she does the laundry, she has kids, she changes the diapers, and her role becomes much less dramatic and much less attractive than that of the muse. Caris Weston is the example of the muse that I think most tragically turned into the art wife, because she was this beautiful, radiant girl whom Edward Weston photographed, you know, naked in the sand dunes in California, and then by the time she was shopping for organic crackers and heating up their 4-day-old pea soup that they like to eat, their relationship became more and more sort of petty and conventional, and they eventually divorced. And just before they divorced, he took some pictures of her that were so nasty and so unflattering and so sarcastic and so strikingly different from the amazing photos he took at the beginning of their relationship when she was still the muse.
You write that the Greek muses never matured, changed their looks, their minds, reinvented themselves, and embraced new vocations. People, however, do change. Perhaps it's impossible to remain a muse forever, unless you conveniently die and can be reinterpreted at will.
Yeah, in some horrible way, the best thing that can happen to a muse is to, you know, live fast, die young, and leave a beautiful corpse, because those are the muses that are always preserved in our memory and in the artist's memory as being goddess-like, ethereal, beautiful. The muse who does become the art wife or the muse who goes on to something else often has a less glorious career towards the end of her life.
Did you have a favorite amongst these 9 women?
Yeah. Lee Miller was certainly my favorite.
This is the woman that Man Ray painted.
Yeah, she had an affair with Man Ray for, I guess, 3 years. And she, you know, she was this famous eyeball at the end of that metronome that he did, you know, the ticking metronome with the eye at the end. And then she left him and became a portrait photographer and then became a war photographer. She was an incredible photographer. I mean, a really first-rate artist. And she covered the war for Vogue magazine.
But her later life wasn't particularly happy.
Oh, it was heartbreaking. You know, I mean, the strangest thing about these muses is how many of them married British country squires and faded into obscurity. She married a not very good British surrealist painter who became a British country squire, lived on their estate, became manic depressive, alcoholic, a gourmet cook, a classical music enthusiast, but never really recaptured her skill as a photographer. I mean, she went on taking photographs, but they're not quite so brilliant as the photograph she was taking earlier.
Do you think that there's something incredibly consuming about being a muse for someone else? You are not the author of the art, of the poem, of the dance, of the painting. You are somewhere in the wings. You may be the fount of inspiration. You may be the intellectual companion, but you are not the author of the work.
Well, on the one hand, I think it would be energizing and encouraging because your life is so dramatic, because your story is so romantic. On the other hand, it's got to be demoralizing to a certain extent, because one of the things that seemed clear to me about these muses was that they were really, often they were just blank slates that their artists projected all over. I mean, the artist saw what he wanted to see, regardless of who these women actually were. He had an idea about what he wanted as his muse, and they were just sort of convenient screens for projection. On the other hand, there are muses. I mean, Suzanne Farrell is another one of my favorites, she was a great artist, and she made it possible for Balanchine to do things that he never would have been able to do otherwise, because she was so physically capable of doing things that none of the other dancers could do. And Yoko Ono, of course, no one would say that she led an undramatic or unromantic or unproductive life. And being a muse, I think, or a part-time muse or a muse for part of her life, was very, very helpful. She was a starving Fluxus artist when she and John Lennon met, and the rest is history.
Would you like to be a muse?
No. I would rather be an artist if I had to make the choice.
It's been wonderful talking with you.
Thanks so much, Jackie.
Francine Prose, a novelist, is also the author of The Lives of the Muses, Nine Women and the Artists They Inspired.